I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio. And you're listening to the Functional Nerds podcast. This is going to be episode number 265.
That is Patrick. He is a author and a blogger and a podcaster. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. My name is John Anelio. I am a musician and a composer and a podcaster and a teacher. And you can check me out on Twitter, at John Anelio. And today, super excited, Major League Baseball's all-time steals leader, Ricky Henderson, is on the show today. It's actually not Ricky Henderson.
It's all about the team, giving 100%.
Let's just speak in sports cliches for as long as we can. But that voice you hear is not Ricky Henderson. It is Randy Henderson. He's an author, a milkshake connoisseur, and a Writers of the Future grand prize winner. He's also a Clarion West graduate. He's the author of Fin Fancy Necromancy, which is an excellent book. I just finished it a few weeks ago and loved it. And it is a dark and quirky urban fantasy, and it's published by Tor. And book two will be out very soon, and that is Big Footloose and Thin Fancy Free, and that is worth checking out as well. And Randy, thank you for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm going to do something that is very unusual. So I am, you know, I'm a singer-songwriter. I've had a bunch of songs out, and but Patrick is the one that ends up singing on the podcast a lot. So I'm actually going to break that rule, and I'm going to sing because. So I just read Thin Fancy Necromancy a couple weeks ago, but I've had it for whenever it came out. I got it about a year ago, I guess, is when this first one came out. And it's such a musical title that this thing has been sitting on my shelf, my to be read pile. And I've had like the tune in my head because it's such a musical sounding title. I just have this Thin Fancy Necromancy. Da, 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 da. It lends itself. There's a melody right there that's happened. So I'm assuming everybody does that.
If you can record that would be great.
All right. Well, I will put it together and then I will give you my fee for such things, because if I write a song about your book, well, you could just count on double the sales that you would.
Right.
But no, thank you for coming on the show. This is a kind of book that is right up my alley, and I'm looking forward to talking a little bit about that and other things with your writing. But before we get into all that, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Patrick, why don't you go with your pick first?
My pick, so as you know, John, I am associated with the Pikes Peak Writers. I am now a member of the board of directors there, and I go to the conference each year in April. And this year, one of our keynotes is Joe R. Lansdale.
Okay, sure.
And Lansdale is known for his Happ and Leonard books. And I've been wanting to get into some of his stuff so that I have, you know, can have some intelligent conversations with him at PBWC. But I actually started with something different. I started with Dead Man's Road.
Okay.
And I did the audiobook, which is narrated by Stefan Rudnicki. And our listeners will probably know Stefan because he's the voice of Lightspeed, right? He does a lot of the Lightspeed audiobooks and narration there. So he's got a great voice, and he does Dead Man's Road, which is a collection of short stories about Lansdale's character, the Reverend. And the Reverend it's kind of set in the Old West, and he wanted something, you know, he grew up watching Westerns, and he basically started the character because he wanted to write a B-movie Western where someone was kind of fighting monsters in the West.
Hmm.
And the Reverend as a character is Jebediah Mercer. And he is a reluctant servant of God. Like he figures God is kind of a dick. And he believes in the God of the Old Testament, not the New Testament, like the judgmental and I'm gonna spite you kind of God. And he goes around the Old West fighting evil things in the name of this God that he doesn't really like. And it's just very interesting. The first story is set in Mud Creek, and it's essentially a zombie uprising, right? And then he goes on to Dead Man's Road, which is where someone has kind of called forth an evil, vengeful spirit. And then he goes on to this little town where someone has used like a Necronomicon kind of book to summon something from the other side, like a demon. And then he's fighting kobolds in a mine in somewhere. So it's like these little string of stories, and they all kind of come together. And it's just, I really liked it, and I loved Radnicki's narration of it. So it's the ebook, Joe R. Lansdale's Dead Man's Road.
Excellent. Very good. Randy, what is your pick this week?
Well, let's see. I'm going to do two quick picks and one
That's fine.
Do not pick. the two quick picks are, one is I finally got to City of Stairs, which is probably an old pick, but I loved it. I've read a lot of like the books that there were a lot of buzz about in the fantasy community, and they all kind of failed for me in one aspect or another. And City of Stairs worked for me on all levels: world building, good characters, good plot and pacing and everything. It just really, really worked for me. I was like, it's really nice when you get to the end of the book and you feel like, ah, that was a good read.
Everything and that is worked. Robert Jackson Bennett, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And then the other one is I'm almost done with All the Birds in the Sky by Charlie Jean Anders.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really wonderful. A lot of fun. You know, it has a mad scientist meets you know, activist witch kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Story.
Yep. I've got awesome. That one sitting here too. That is at the top of my TBU Red Palm. I'm really looking forward to reading that one too.
Yeah, get to that one. And then my do not recommend is Legends of Tomorrow. Man, is that letting me down? That thing, I just, it's like so such great opportunity there. You know, I mean, I like The Flash, I like Arrow, and I'm like, cool. You know, this one's jam packed full of superheroes and characters, and it just is jam-packed full of boring. So
it's definitely struggling to find its voice. Yes.
Yes. And it's, you know, there are some obvious reasons. You know, it's like, I think this happens a lot in stories where anytime you start to bring in time travel or a character that is immortal, or, and this has all of these, or, you know, or someone who's basically, you know, has foreknowledge and sort of infinite resources. And, you know, all of these types of things create problems in the story. And that's sort of like, well, why don't you just, you know, if you have time travel, why don't you just go back and, you know, fix it kind of a thing. Or if you have this foreknowledge, you know, and all of these resources, you really should be able to like get your crap together and take mm-hmm. care of the situation. And every time that they have like the opportunity to take him out, for some reason they make the choice of, you know, well, we'll just leave these two people to fight him. Everyone else will just go over here and wait, or something, right? They have to come up with, it's sort of like in horror, they have to come up with excuses why you can't just use your cell phone to call for help, right? So mm-hmm. in this case, they have to come up with all of these excuses every time as sort of why they don't just turn them into dust, basically, right? So I don't know. I think that's their failing. They need to really have worked more on sort of a deeper character motivations. And they flip flopped in the first episode. You know, it's sort of like first he rallies them with this idea of becoming the legends they can be, and then in the same episode, it's like, well, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And then now I think they're just all struggling to figure out what is their, why are they there really? And it's not very compelling. Like the. Anyway, I could keep going on, but it's
okay.
it's so disappointing on so many levels because it had so much potential and
it's a big cast too.
Yeah.
And trying to get everybody a moment in every episode is right. also really, really hard. And I think they're struggling with that. You know.
Oh yeah, I mean, I totally agree big.
Yeah.
I completely understand trying to like give all the characters their time.
I've been kind of enjoying it nonetheless. I've still kind of dug it, but I think that is a problem with having that many characters, is it's hard to give them all something to do. You know, I almost wonder if they're going to end up, you know, trying to make the show more about certain characters than others and have, you know, some characters be more secondary and if some are going to take over. But who knows? I've enjoyed it so far, but it does, you know, one of the points you made about, you know, the time travel, it does remind me a bit of Stargate in that we had Joseph Valazzi on the show long ago. I think he was on SF Signal. That was like in the rare time when I was on the SF Signal podcast back in the day. And one of the things we talked about was that as Stargate went on and they got exposed to more civilizations that had this advanced technology, you know, for instance, when they basically got to be able to do beaming like Star Trek, so that became a thing where they were able to beam people. Then from that point on, the writers were like, well, why don't they just beam out of there? So there were so many episodes of Stargate in the later seasons where they had to come up with an excuse why beaming wasn't working, you know, for whatever reason. They'd have to have some sort of like, you know, there's some gravitational thing going on right now and we can't, because they're like, oh yeah, we screwed ourselves because we introduced beaming and now that's the way out of every problem that we have, and we have to come up with an excuse not to have. But time travel presents sort of the same issue.
Well, all you have to do when that happens is either reverse the polarity, because that's usually the solution.
We need to reroute power through the secondary Odian conduit on deck 3.
Right. Yep.
I've kind of dug it anyway, but yeah, I hear your concerns. My pick this week is a music pick. My beloved metal genre. It's a new album. There is a record label that I've spoke about before. It's called Frontiers Record. It's out of Italy. I think it's just this one Italian guy who has a lot of money, who just gets these, a lot of guys from these 80s bands together and puts little super groups together for them to make an album. And I've enjoyed almost every album. I think I'm in a very small subset of people who has interest in this kind of music. But there's a new one by, so it's not only these like kind of older 80s guys, there's a lot of European artists who, you know, have something of a career in Europe, but no one in North America knows about them. And one of them is this guy, Eric Martinson, who's in a band called Eclipse. And the other is a guy called Ronnie Atkins, who's in a band called Pretty Maids. And they have an album out right now called Nordic Union. And get it, because they're both from Scandinavia there, so that's the Nordic Union thing. But it's a great, it's just a collaboration between these two, and it's a great metal, but like with lots of melodies. And just if you've heard me pick this kind of stuff before, which I have quite a bit over the years, this is another excellent release. So if this is the kind of music you like, this is something you're not going to hear too much about, but it's called Nordic Union. It's on all the streaming sites, so if you use Spotify or Apple Music or anything, you can get the album that way, or you can even YouTube it. There's a couple of videos from the album. So that is my pick this week, Nordic Union. You know, Randy, we were talking a little bit about, you know, Star Trek a bit. We made some mention. And, you know, there is in Fin Fancy Necromancy, there is some Star Trek references. And, you know, I before I read the book, it was like, oh, there's a lot of 80s references in this. And I thought there were some 80s references in this, but it wasn't as heavy-handed as some of the sort of press led me to believe, which I thought was good. I mean, I enjoyed all the 80s references, but it's not like Ready Player One, where it's, you know, every other sentence is an 80s reference, which I liked Ready Player One too, but not so dependent on it. So maybe you could tell us a little something about why you incorporated some of the Star Trek and the 80s stuff into the book in the first place.
Yeah, sure. So... largely because I'm a child of the 80s. So it's sort of, you know, it was the formative years for me. I love the 80s basically. So when I went to write Fin Fancy Necromancy, it was all about, I hadn't even intended it to be a book to begin with. It was sort of, I was sitting down and taking a break from writing these huge, epic, complex, Game of Thrones type epic fantasy stuff, and just having some fun. I was just trying to write for fun, so it was just sort of like me with some magic. I was like, I don't want to do zero research. I want to do zero like thinking about this. Just have some fun writing again and find that joy of writing again. So it was me, and so it was sort of like, you know, I just want to put make some fun like 80s references, you know. because I love the 80s. And why would I be making 80s references? I've been out of the world for 25 years, you know. Let's start with something fun. Okay, a giant magical meteor is falling on my head. Why is this meteor falling on my head? So that was just kind of how it was, just me just sort of like pulling stuff in and having fun with it. That was things that I truly loved and enjoyed. And then I was like, actually, this is kind of cool. I like this, and I'm enjoying this. I had not really read urban fantasy before this. I was pretty much mostly epic, high fantasy, second world fantasy, portal fantasy, you know. I think that's good in some ways. I wasn't in danger of emulating things, but then on the other hand, I was in danger of, writing things that were similar, just basically based on tropes and, you know, sort of the things you sort of absorb. I'd seen Dresden Files. I hadn't read it yet. Ready Player One came out around the middle of the time that I was writing Fin Fancy, and I was like, but everyone was like, you gotta read Ready Player One, who knew I was writing this book and had read early chapters. And I'm like, no. I didn't read it until like after Fin Fan, like a year and a half, almost 2 years after later. But anyway, point being, to bring it back around to your original question, sorry, I kind of rambled a bit there, but it was all about sort of having fun and doing writing about what I love and enjoy, so that I could just have that joy of writing and creating, and not be really deep focused on the complex interweaving of multiple subplots and all of that, which did come a little later. I did sort of start to work that in later once I realized it was going to be a book. But
yeah, well, you'd mentioned that you hadn't read a lot of urban fantasy prior to this, and I think that is one of the things that I would imagine would be appealing as an author, but I think even as a reader, it's one of the things that's nice about urban fantasy, in that it can be because of what that title sort of implies, is that it can be about very personal things to you, about your personal interests, because you can put it in this contemporary setting, which can basically be the town that you live in, and it could be all about the experiences that you've had, and you introduce these fantastic elements or these magical elements to it. And I think as an author, that must be kind of appealing. I think if one was just studying all of the various urban fantasy novels and worlds out there and then just trying to crank something out based on that, that's kind of the opposite of what I kind of like about urban fantasy.
So yeah, I absolutely. Yeah, that's I think that was part of why I needed to write Fin Fancy at this point, was because the book I'd written before it was a YA novel, it was going to be part of this big YA fantasy. And the reason I was writing YA is because, you know, I walked into Barnes & Noble one day and my fantasy and science fiction section had been pushed back to make room for the new amazing young adult section, and they'd pushed the science fiction back in the shadowy corner there. So I was like, oh, wow. And that, and the fact that obviously, you know, YA is hot. And so I had this idea, and I actually started to think of it as an epic fantasy. But then I realized that the magic system really worked well for a YA, for various reasons. And so I was like, well, I should write this as a YA. So then I kind of read some YA books, kind of see how they were framed and what were some of the common tropes and stuff in them. And then I tried to write it as a YA. And so I was doing exactly what you said. You know, I was trying to write to a particular market, write to a particular style that wasn't inherently like a passion of mine. It wasn't that I had come to YA because I read YA and I love YA. And I was passionate about, the conflict with authority figures and all of that. I came to it more as this seems like a logical step as a writer for me to pursue this as a YA novel. And so, So I think that hurt the novel that I was writing and made it feel more like work than it should have been. I mean, writing is definitely work, but I needed to just come back to writing something that just came out of me.
You had to fall in love with it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and there's always this conflict between art and commerce too, because I think whatever creative field you're in, you want to write from a personal point of view or create from a personal point of view, but you know, you'd like people to read it or listen to it or whatever the case may be too. So there is something there, but I remember, you know, having this, reading this article with, Kirk Hammett, one of the guitar players in Metallica. And, you know, he had said, well, you know, we just always did what we wanted to do. And he's like, if you're trying to chase whatever the trend is, the problem is by the time, and especially in fiction, in writing fiction, there's such a long turnaround from the time you write a book to the time it comes out in sort of traditional publishing that, So let's say you want to hop on that bandwagon, by the time your book would even come out, they're probably onto something else already anyway. So, you know, you're almost better off sticking with kind of what you're into, and hopefully the timing will work out where whatever you're making will eventually hit that spot where that's what people want to read.
Yeah, don't write zombies or vampires. Those are flash in the pan. Those are going to be...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But no, it's true, though. But I think that's one way of looking at it. And, yeah. And getting back to the idea of urban fantasy, what I liked about this, so it is from a first-person point of view. And, you know, anytime I read a book written in first person, I just assume like, oh, well, that's the author. That's who it is. And, you know, the book takes place in Washington State. And so I don't know if that's where you lived or live or I'm kind of assuming it's that. And like, you know, and I think all of those references and to give people a little bit of background about the story of the book, the main character is a necromancer who gets exiled when he's a teenager. And he's exiled from our world for 25 years. So it starts in the 80s. And then when he comes back in our modern time, he hasn't been around for 25 years. So the 80s stuff is what he's into because he's been in the, I don't know if you'd call it the Fey world or whatever you want to call it within in your universe there. So all of that 80s stuff is still relevant to him. And so it's a really good excuse and it does play a lot into that character, I think. And it is sort of fun to see, you know, sort of the technological things that he's sort of coming back to as well. But I thought that was just one of the things that made the book enjoyable was that I'm like, yeah, this is what this author is into. This author is into the Star Trek movies, and this author is into Commodore 64, and this author, and all of the various things that you know, people of a certain age and background can get into. And I think that's one of the cool things about urban fantasy. You know, I know Patrick is a big fan of the Dresden File books.
Yep.
And I don't know anything about Jim Butcher as a person, but I've read the first two books in that series, and it's like, oh, I bet Jim Butcher spent some time in Chicago, and I bet, you know, and maybe it's not the case. Maybe it's something totally different. But it's like they're incorporating things from their experience, from their life. And you know, if you're trying to write Game of Thrones style books, which I love those, that's probably my favorite genre, is the epic high fantasy stuff. It's a little harder to be personal in those kinds of books, I would think.
Well, I think there's two sides to this. There's writing what you are passionate about or things that interest you. So the write what you love you know approach is highly recommended, and you hear that a lot. And then there's basically writing you. And so writing your experiences, writing you as a character, which that's when you start to get into like the Mary Sues and the Gary Stews or whatever, right? So I think for me, I think all writers obviously incorporate something of themselves into their books to some extent, to most characters to some extent, but like in Fin Fancy, I mean, definitely I started off, it was very much me. But as the book progressed, obviously I don't have the experiences that Finn has. I don't have the life that Finn has had. My family is not Finn's family. There are some elements of some of my family in some of Finn's family, but you know, that was very intentional. I wanted to create sort of a family story rather than it was kind of take that sort of dysfunctional comedic family element of Arrested Development. And, because so much of urban fantasy from what I basically just from reading the book covers was, you know, the lone badass wizard or demon hunter or whatever. And so I was trying to kind of go in a different direction there. But I think, my love of the 80s, my love of like the Commodore 64, and I'm just sort of my love of fantasy and science fiction that I read growing up and all of that all kind of comes out through Finn. But Finn is, and some of what I see as sort of my flaws maybe, but I deliberately was conscious in trying not to create a character that was sort of, you know, this is me, haha, with magic, and I'm going to win the day, and I'm the big hero, you know, kind of character.
Yeah, well, I recently read a book called The Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. She's well known for the Eat, Pray, Love book, and The Big Magic is a book on creativity and sort of the creative process, and I found it to be very good and very useful and inspiring. And one of the things she talks about in there, you know, we were just talking about you're writing what you know, writing yourself, is, you know, how when she was a younger person, you know, because she wanted to be a writer from an early age, you know, her whole goal through her early adulthood was to try to have lots of different kinds of experiences to draw from, and, you know, to go on different kinds of adventures. And, you know, sort of related to that, I think so many of us, we have our life and we have our, whether, you know, even most of the writers or many of the writers that when we have them on our show, you know, so many of them have day jobs too. I think very few people make a full-time living as a writer. Some do. You have your day job existence and, you know, you live where you live and all of that. And one of the things that I've sort of come across, and especially through Elizabeth Gilbert's book, was this idea of, well, yeah, you could do something and then you can do something else for a while. And, you don't have to just be identified by your job or your one thing, or, you know, we live, you know, if we're fortunate enough, we can live longer and longer these days. And she pointed out this one example of a woman who she met who was like 90 years old and got this interest in like Mesopotamian art and culture when she was 80 and spent her whole 80s just totally just researching and falling in love with this thing that by the time she was 90, she was an expert on this. So when museums and stuff would do, presentations on Mesopotamia, she was called in. And it's the example of, you know, you can always even bring it back to that Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours thing. It's like, well, if you are into something for like 10 years, you're probably, if not an expert, pretty close to it by the end of it. So it's like one of these things where it's like, it behooves you to sort of follow what you're into, even if it's something totally different that you maybe discover when you're 35 years old.
The flip side of that is, I mean, you know, I always thought it would be cool to be a movie star, not because of the fame, well, maybe because of the money, but also because, you know, it's like, oh yeah, you know, I had to like train with the world's best fencer for this movie and learn how to fence in like 6 weeks, and I had to learn how to do kung fu in like, you know, 2 months with the world's best kung fu master. You know, I got paid basically to like train with these experts and all of this stuff and learn all these really cool skills, and I always thought that aspect of acting would be really, really fun. I deliberately try to get roles where I would like, they would pay me to learn these really cool skills or learn like, you know, and get the, you know, what's being filmed in this location. You know, I'd get on a movie that's being filmed in Iraq because I figure, you know, I'd hopefully be, you know, it would be safe. I'd be protected. But I'd get to see the site of the hanging, you know, Gardens of Babylon, right? Or go to, you know, I'd love to go to Iran and see, you know, Persepolis and all of that. I think, And as a writer, I think that it's kind of the same in that, you know, you can be like, you know, this is kind of intriguing to me. These are things that are interesting to me. And if I'm going to have to spend the next, you know, several years invested in researching and writing and then hopefully promoting and talking about this thing, you know, I'm going to choose some things that are I want to learn about and research and interest. And that also falls into that, you know, writing. It's not necessarily what you already love. It's what interests you and piques your, you know, that you can be passionate about researching and then, you know, investigating. And it, ideally, I'm still kind of trying to figure this all out, but maybe right off the tax write-off, you know, go, hey, I can go, I have to go, I'm sorry, I need to go over, you know, I need to go to Egypt to research this stuff for my book.
So, it's funny that you know, mentioned that because... Because one of the things I was telling John earlier about, I'm now involved. I'm on a board member for the Pikes Peak Writers, which is a 501c3 in Colorado Springs, and we put on a conference every year. And you know, we're always looking for people to present and do workshops at that conference. And one of the things that I always see on Facebook writers talking about is, hey, does anybody know a tax accountant who works with writers? Because that's like this whole thing, right? It's this part of the business that we don't necessarily think about, but it is kind of a specific little niche, right? Because if you just go to a regular accountant and say, "Yeah, I need to write off this fencing lesson," right. as part of my job, they're going to be like, "You can't do that. You can't just take your fencing." And you're like, "No. I'm a writer. I had to do this."
Yeah, and I think it's basically, I think, you know, what I heard was, you know, you can do it and write it off as losses, but if you're doing that, like if you're claiming income as a writer for like 5 years, and if you don't have any income really as a writer for 5 years, or which can easily be the case, you know, it, as long as you're not claiming losses for, like, if you're claiming losses for more than like 3 of those 5 years, it's going to throw up a flag and the IRS will ding you. But yeah, if you start to make a little money, you can try and start to write that stuff off.
Oh, a lot of writers will write off convention appearances, right? And the cost of going to a Worldcon, which can be like $1,000 to $1,200. So
it's like, yeah, I get to go hang out with people and celebrate this thing that I love. And oh yeah, but it's work.
Yeah, I had a bunch of musician friends that would be like, "Oh, why don't you write off, like, you know, the cost of your guitars and your amps?" And I'm like, "Yeah, but then there's pressure to then make money doing this, and like, I don't make enough money doing this."
And your tight leather pants and your all those things that you can write off.
And my wigs and
all the makeup.
Oh yeah, that stuff is not cheap.
John Anilio is the star child.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, you were talking about actors and stuff, and I think that is one of the reasons why so many actors put out albums is because at some point for some role they had to learn how to play the guitar or something, and they can actually sort of do it okay. And then the next thing you know, you have Kevin Costner's band, and you have Johnny Depp and his band, and you have all these guys. I mean, I think a lot of times it's something they did.
Explain to me, well, Don Johnson.
Yeah, I was gonna say they live in a little bubble. They live in a bubble where people are telling them how incredible they are, and wow, you really picked up the guitar really quickly, and you know, I could believe that you really are you know, Jim Morrison there, Val Kilmer. And so, well, to be fair, he did actually a really good job, so but the point being, generally speaking, yeah, Don Johnson, yeah, art
I think the way you can explain it.
My girl wants to party all the time, party all the time.
Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, they call him Bruno.
Right.
I think with Don Johnson, I think what explains that is cocaine. I think that really, a lot of 80s stuff, you could just say, you know, cocaine. That's that's where a lot of that comes from.
Fair enough.
But you know, we were in talking about Don Johnson. I read a lot of those, you know, sort of oral histories and tributes to Glenn Frey. So there was a lot of recent, who, you know, as at the time of this recording, passed away about a month ago, I guess. And Don Johnson does come up in those because Glenn Frey was on Miami Vice in the 80s and did have the
Smuggler's Blues.
Yeah, well, the one from
The other one from Don Johnson, the "You Belong to the City," that yeah. was
the whole video. Clip. The whole video is Don Johnson walking through a city, smoking cigarettes.
Yes, and, yeah. yes.
His Miami Vice outfit.
Yeah, I went back and watched a lot. There's a concert where there's a bunch of clips because we talked about that Eagles documentary. That's I think it's still up on Netflix too. Which if you haven't watched it yet, awesome. even if you don't like the Eagles, totally worth watching. And Glenn Frey is amazing in that because he talks so much shit about Don Felder
oh, yeah.
and doesn't hold any punches. Nope. It's awesome. So
there's just that moment where they cut to him. He's sitting on that stool and he's just looking at the camera and he shakes his head. He's like, fucking Felder.
Yeah, it's great. Even if you don't like Eagles, but there's a concert that was recorded in the 70s and it's the lineup of the band where it's Felder and Joe Walsh. It's, and it's with Randy Meisner playing bass. And it's just it's a very high audio and video quality for the time. I don't know what it was recorded for. Glenn Frey is wearing like a University of Colorado like black T-shirt, and it's so good. They're so good at that. I'm not even a huge fan of the Eagles, but it's great to see that. I rewatched all of that, and they sound amazing. And my wife was watching it with me, and we were talking about, you know, man, Glenn Frey totally pulls off that mustache, like. That was the mustache that a lot of dudes had in the 70s, the kind of like, you know, the one that went down across your lips. And it's like, he is pulling that off. And he's wearing like sunglasses perched on the top of his head. Like, he was cool, Glenn Frey. So,
yeah.
all right. Well, we could talk about 80s stuff all we want, but all Glenn Frey as much as we can. But, you know, as we're sort of like coming to the end of our time, Randy, what, you know, obviously, so Finn Fancy has been out for about a year, and then the new book, when does the new book come out? Is it out yet?
February 16th, this Tuesday.
Okay. So, well, by the time this episode airs, it will be out. So, very good. And
Bigfoot Loose and Finn Fancy Freaks.
Yes. Bigfoot Loose and Fancy Freaks. And there's a nice, I'm holding both books here, and you can see their covers are very similar. So it's a very unique cover and sort of design. It's very muted, so it's really cool. So go and check those books out. Anything you want to let our listeners know about? Are you going to have any upcoming con appearances or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm going on tour down the mostly down the West Coast, Portland, San Francisco, San Diego. I'll be hopping over to Spokane, Boise, Denver. So,
when are you coming to Denver?
March. I'd have to look at the calendar. I should know it, but I have so many different dates. Sorry.
Tattered
What's
cover?
That?
Is it Tattered Cover?
Tattered Cover, yep.
Okay. Well, I might have to come say hello.
Yes. I'll take it to Denver. So, you can check it all out. I mean, my schedule's on my website.
Your website is randyhenderson.com, but Randy with the hyphen in between Randy and
Randy Henderson. Henderson.
Randy Dash Henderson, yes. And and on Twitter you're at Randy Author.
Yep.
So
Randy Author. Weird. And you know, if you go on Facebook and just like do a search on Bigfoot Loose, all of my probably all of my Facebook events will come up and you can.
So has anybody from Britain commented on your Twitter handle?
Right. Yeah. No, actually when I got the, so Titan UK publishes me in the UK. And when that deal came through, first I did the happy dance and then I, you know, and I emailed my acquisitions editor and was like, so, you know, should I change it to Randall for the UK? Like, is there going to be any like, are people going to be like snickering at my name or, you know, thinking this is maybe like Bigfoot erotica or something? And she's like, no, I don't think that's going to be an issue. So apparently it's not too much of an issue. Feeling Randy. So, yeah.
Very cool. Okay, so that's all Randy stuff for us. Once again, if you dig the show, you want to support us over at Patreon, go check that out, patreon.com/functionalnerds. You can join the 41 other people who back us every month and make the show possible. Patrick, anything for you that you want to mention?
Nope. I just think people should check us out on functionalnerds.com and check you out on at John and Elio and check me out at ATFMB. I'm spending more time on Facebook recently than I am on Twitter just because Twitter can be such a pain in the ass.
Yeah. I hear you. All right, everybody, have a great week and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks smoke.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?